Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hagan. I'm working at
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, welcome to Party Friday. Chuck Bonneville, Julie Hayden. This is a Chuck and Julie grassroots show, Truth Straight Up.
Brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture, and Chinese Medicine. Lots to talk about today. Coming up at 3:30, we're going to have Vicky Tompkins, El Paso County Republican Party chairperson. What a coup they had. Mike Lindell is going to be the guest speaker.
Oh, what a great
in a couple
speaker.
Of weeks. Yeah.
They always put a great show on.
They had Marjorie Taylor Greene, the last of them there. Yeah. And no shocker here. The rhinos are trying to destroy it. But wanted to start off with one of our favorite persons, Ash in America, Ash Epp, who has been covering, it's been going on for about a week now. I'm calling it the persecution of former Mesa County clerk Tina Peters, charged with several fake felonies, all in an effort to shut her and everyone else up. And Ash has been covering the trial. So Ash, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Ash.
I know you can't really cover it while you're talking to us, so we'll let you go.
Well, the first question I want to ask you, there was an article I think in the Colorado Sun, indicating the judge is showing his bias. He'd been reversed on another case because he tried
Actually,
to
Rocky Mountain Voice. Heidi Ganahl's Rocky Mountain Voice.
I was going to say, that doesn't sound like something the Colorado Sun would say.
No.
Yeah, you're right. Well, it's not something Rocky Mountain Voice would do either, but that he got overturned because he tried to interfere too much with the trial. What's your opinion of the judge?
So the judge is Matthew Barrett, out in Mesa County, and he was overturned on appeal, and it was due to, as I understand it, opining on the guilt of the accused. And so that's not good, right? I mean, that's a violation of due process. So in terms of the judge, you know, how he is acting in this case, I think for the majority of it, he's been very fair. This is day 10 of trial. Which is bananas. It's been going on for so long. The defense just started to call their own witnesses on, end of the day. Yesterday, they called Sharona Bishop first. And the judge said just, 30 minutes ago, when he got back from taking a break, when the jury came in, he said, "I think we're back on track," which is very strange because the defense has had, like a day at this point.
Right. I was reading, one of the Colorado Sun or Colorado Politics was saying that everyone was upset. The defense had all of this evidence that they had to bring into the courtroom, and it was taking too long. And it's like, hello, do you know what I mean? So forget about all, don't forget about that. Given all of that, one of the things I thought that was interesting, I'd like you to kind of explain this, is so the prosecution puts on its case. Theoretically, the judge says Tina Peters can't even bring up the issue of election integrity, right? Which is ridiculous in the first place. But it seems to me, and I want to answer that Sharona Bishop, who is herself, as you said, an unindicted co-conspirator, seems to me that's sort of a sword they want hanging over her head. And it seems to me she is not bowing down. She is telling the truth. And I got the impression that she sort of proved the prosecution's star witness to be a liar, right?
So it's going to come down to how the jury consumes that. But yes. So
hang on. Let me go. The doorbell's ringing. You take it over, Chuck. I got to deal with
the dog. There were a few witnesses. There are a few witnesses. Sandra Brown, who was the back office elections manager. Belinda Nisley, who was the deputy clerk. Jerry Wood, who is the guy in question about the credentials used in the trusted build. All of those witnesses said they didn't know who Conan Hayes was, that they had no understanding or involvement of anything until basically the cyber symposium or shortly thereafter. And when the defense, through Sharona Bishop, was able to authenticate and have admitted a series of Signal Signal messages in the Signal app from May of 2021, where all of those people were together, So for Jerry Wood to say, you know, I've never met Conan Hayes. I don't know who he is. For Sandy Brown to say, I didn't even know this guy existed until the Cyber Symposium. And I'm paraphrasing their testimony, but that's essentially what they said. To then be, you know, to be shown to be in a signal group with the person in question in May of 2021, it does appear that she proved them to be a liar. It will come down to what the jury believes and what the jury instructions are.
Another thing that people don't quite understand about juries and trials and deliberations, so much depends, if it's not overwhelmingly one way or the other, upon the personalities of the jurors, that juries usually are not unanimous, and then it's a matter of convincing, and usually they're, you know, half of them or more don't care one way or the other, they just want to go home. And they may, you know, they'll go to whoever voice is the strongest and they think will get them out of there the quickest. And so that's why trials are so hard to predict, including by judges who say, I never know, or usually say that. And it's because they don't know the personalities, which ones will predominate in the courtroom. And so you can watch a trial and think, well, God, this person will win or this person will lose. And then you're shocked when they don't. But you find out that, you know, there are one or two strong-willed people that really led the rest. It's sort of like that movie, 12 Angry Men.
Well, yeah, I was going to say that.
Yeah. You know, at this point, and you're biased, but everybody's biased. How do you think it's going for Tina?
Well, the standard is reasonable doubt, right? This is a criminal trial, and I think they have it. So the charges are very interesting in this case. We have the identity theft charge and I think it's conspiracy to commit impersonation. So that all has to do with the identity of Jerry Wood. And I think, and I'm not a lawyer, Chuck, you're a lawyer, you might be able to correct me on this, but I think that comes down to Jerry Wood's knowledge of his identity being used. If he knew about it and consented to it, his identity wasn't stolen. And that's where those signal messages were going to show that, you know, it's the identity theft charge should go away. The rest of the charges have to do with being deceptive with the Secretary of State. Now, they're both duly elected officials. And I was just talking about this over lunch on our coverage of the trial. The way these charges have been put together is all about the rules, the Secretary of State's rules, and particularly her rules in 2021, which were COVID emergency rules. And so the reason that, you know, she was allegedly deceptive was to get around COVID emergency rules, ergo she broke the rules, and that amounts to breaking the law and official misconduct and all this kind of stuff. The judge said this morning, before the jury came into the room, they were arguing about the admissibility of some piece of evidence. And he said, they're not crimes. There's not even an argument that they're crimes. And this is what's very interesting is yesterday, the court qualified Caleb Thornton, a attorney at Jenna Griswold's office and a key part of the rulemaking process, qualified him to testify about the rules and basically about the law and how breaking the rules is basically breaking the law, because they can't say she broke the law. If she did what she did today, she would have broken the law,
but not
because of the Colorado Election Security Act. That was in 2022. The law that governed in 2021, when Tina Peters did what she did, she didn't break the law. It's why they had to pass that law. So to me, one of the biggest forms of bias that we've seen from the judge, going back to your earlier question, Chuck, is that Caleb Thornton was he's a witness with personal knowledge. He was a part of the investigation of this originally. He's a fact witness to this.
Right.
Jenna Griswold's office is essentially a party, right? They don't investigate or prosecute, but she's the aggrieved party here. So to then qualify him as an expert to educate the jury on how her lawful conduct becomes unlawful, that to me is incredibly improper. And I think that
conflict of interest. It'd be like, be like asking the burglar, you know, do you have any problem with people burglarizing? Oh, no, it's fine. Well, I mean, and that's remind people exactly. That's what this case is about. What Tina Peters did. The bottom line thing is she asked questions and the Secretary of State has said, under me, Queen Jenna Griswold, you're not allowed to ask questions. And if you ask questions, you're breaking my rules. I mean, Tina Peters was doing her job as the clerk and recorder, arguably, right? Maybe the jury could say, well, she exceeded her limits. But I think, but what the system has done is it said, because she was asking questions, Tina Peters is not allowed to do her job. She can only do her job the way we tell her she can do her job. And that allows no questions at all.
Well, let me ask you
another. Well, I'm going to answer.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's worse than that.
Okay.
I think they're trying to convict her under Senate Bill 22-153, which was passed in 2022. And they can't get there because the law was passed after the so-called crime. And so what they're doing is pitting together rules and statutes and things to say, well, the totality of it amounts to a crime. So what I think it should actually come down to is statutory authority in 2021. Right. To your point, Julie, she was doing her job. She believed she was operating within the law. She read the rules. She sought legal advice. She, you know, had somebody with the people at all times, just like the rules say and all the things. The only thing that she didn't do was tell Jenna Griswold what she was doing because she was effectively investigating Jenna Griswold. She believed that Jenna Griswold was coming in to wipe records and she was taking steps to preserve the records. She's not in trouble for preserving the records. She's not in trouble for leaked passwords or online or any of that. She is in trouble for lying to Jenna Griswold. And to your point, I mean, that is... They're both duly elected. So if that's the standard, why are clerks elected? Clerks have no business being elected if that's the standard, if they're just employees of the Secretary of State.
Yeah, well, exactly. And I want to bring, did you want to make your point? Okay.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I want to point out to people too, because this, remember, we talked to you not that long ago about your trial, again, involving election integrity and trying to shut down.
A lot of the same people. A lot of the same Secretary of State people.
Exactly. Right. And there, too, we found out that their key witness lied. Basically, their key witness was making stuff up. So here we have another election integrity case where the key witnesses are lying. The prosecution knows the key witnesses are lying because they set them up to lie. And somehow or another, that's all OK with the Democrats and Jenna Griswold.
Yeah. So sources that are there that, you know, are kind of telling me what's going on in the courtroom. It's my understanding that the prosecution had no idea that those signal messages existed. That was impeachment evidence.
That is never good. When you're surprised in the courtroom about what a key piece of evidence is, you don't have time to respond and fake it and ship shape it and everything else. So that's pretty incredible.
And it's impeachment evidence. It was brought in to impeach the testimony of Jerry Wood and Sandy Brown, and it has done so. And so the prosecution has been trying to figure out how to combat that. So that's one thing that, you know, I think is good for people to know, is that also the prosecution had all the devices. And so why weren't these signals that, you know, Brady, maybe, I don't know, why weren't these produced prior? It's an interesting question. The other thing that comes into play about the devices and, you know, the key witnesses, Nisley and Wood and Brown, is those devices were taken on a federal search warrant, and the interviews with those key witnesses took place in Denver. So one of the things that and this is another thing, Chuck, that maybe you can tell me if this is, you know, worry that is not warranted, but how do you prosecute a RICO case? You roll up the lower level players up and up and up. I wonder if this is a part of a broader federal case. They advise Sharona Bishop, you have, you know, Fifth Amendment rights and you still have liability. And so you should, you know, be careful before testifying. I wonder if we're going to have my, you know, tinfoil hat theory is October surprise. The whole RICO gets rolled up and it's obviously, you know, get Mike to get Trump kind of thing. I don't know, but I do think it's interesting that this is not just a state and local case. The search warrant that took their devices was a federal search warrant and all their interviews were in Denver.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past the Department of Justice to.
Yeah, nothing else is working.
Yeah.
Hopefully, if they're smart, they won't make Jack Smith be in charge of it.
Weirdly, because you have a right to not be tried again for the same crime, it doesn't apply to on the federal level. So yeah, it definitely could happen. Let me
And that
ask
would
you.
only be Tina, though, right? Like, so all the people they're talking about, all these unindicted co-conspirators could potentially be indicted by the
Oh,
feds after
absolutely. I
this.
mean, and including even the prosecution witnesses. Let me ask you another kind of, having been in lots of courtrooms, and same with Julie. One of the things that really matters is how likable the defense attorneys are and how likable the prosecution is, even though that is not evidence submitted or anything else. In your opinion, how are the lawyers coming across as a likability and competency?
So the defense attorneys first. I think that the defense attorney that's coming across the best is Amy Jones. She doesn't have a whole bunch of back and forth and arguing with the judge, not a bunch of stuff. Now, she hasn't had that much airtime, right? But she's I think very likable, appears very competent. John Case, who I mean, I think everybody in the election integrity movement knows John Case. He's kind of a tireless fighter. I think he's very likable. I think he comes off as very likable. The other guy is there's Mr. Administer. I think he comes off as very competent, kind of a hard nose, mirrors kind of the prosecution attorney Shapiro with, just kind of that old the guy you'd picture to be, the hard attorney in the courtroom. Dan Hartman is problematic for the defense, I think. He has been constantly in conflict with the judge, constantly in conflict with the prosecuting attorneys. And so just from, what you're asking, Chuck, is what is the jury seeing, right? So in terms of that, the very first day where the jury was present, which was or where the jury was present for witnesses, was Thursday, last Thursday, and August 1st. And that was the day where, and I'm never the person to, cast doubt on the judge. Like I want you to make your case when I'm covering a trial. I want to know the evidence and the facts and all of that. He was openly hostile to the defense in front of the jury on last Thursday, and it was Hartman that he was openly hostile to. So I think that that's the one problem they have. Now, on the prosecution side, the prosecuting attorney, particularly Shapiro, but I think also Rubenstein a little bit, are coming off as very aggressive, very, and this really showed when Sharona Bishop was on the stand today. She was being badgered. She was, being like, and that I don't think looked good for the prosecuting attorneys. They're very arrogant. They, believe that they have made their case beyond a reasonable doubt already before her defense is even brought. And that shows through in their tone and the way that they're asking their questions. I do think that they made some, they were scored on a bit by Sharona Bishop, in my
It
opinion.
sounds like it. It sounds like it. Let me ask you this in terms of the mood of the country and the jurors. I mean, these charges, these have been simmering for years now, right? And
Since the
it
last election.
right. Well, since, yeah, exactly. And in the ensuing time, we've learned that the media lied to us about Joe Biden. The media lied to us about COVID. The media lied to us about the Hunter Biden laptop. The media lied to us about the January 6th insurrection. I mean, the
I
list
lied about my case.
They lied about your case. The list goes on and on and on. And I'm wondering where, because again, if I'm a juror, I'm like, so wait, so like what? She like, may, and the bottom line is Tina Peters made copies of records. That's it, right? I mean, she didn't give them to the Russians. She didn't, change them. She made copies. And I'm wondering your sense. I mean, my sense would be that if this trial had happened 4 years ago, it might have been one way. But given all of the things we as Americans have learned about our government and how trustworthy it is in the meantime, do you
Well,
see?
they brought in one of their voir dire ones, how much do you read? I forget the name of the local paper, but that was a big question on which jurors were picked or not picked, because the local paper has been very anti Tina
But I
Peters.
mean, do you
It's
see?
Charles Ashby, right?
Yeah. Do you see that playing a role at all? That just that perhaps the mood of the country and the red pilling of the country, or is am I just being optimistic?
Well, no, I mean, I think if you're talking about public sentiment broadly, Julie, you're spot on. I think that there's from what I see, people are very divided on the issue of Tina Peters and whether or not what she did was justified. Now, in terms of that specific jury pool, I do think it makes a difference because the media reporting on this has been all one way. And she has been fully convicted and sentenced already in the court of public opinion. There hasn't been a counter narrative to that. And so I do think that impacts the jury pool because it's in all of the papers out there in Grand Junction. It's on all of the local news out there in Grand Junction. And it's one side of the story.
Even I was reading the Colorado Sun, in the words that they were using, they were talking about, rather than saying Tina Peters had a meeting with these people, she was saying that the words that the reporters used were Tina Peters was conspiring with them. Now, that's the crime. I mean, you're right. It's just outrageous. Well, sometimes that can work, I hope, to in somebody like Tina's benefit when the media is like, I didn't know that. I didn't know that. I didn't know that, right? And all of a sudden, and hopefully, you know.
Have you been able to observe the demeanor of the juror?
No, the jury's not on the screen. Now, I do have reporters for Colorado Free Press that are there in the courtroom. And there were a couple moments. Sharona Bishop's testimony, the jurors were scribbling notes. And even people that hadn't been taking notes all along were scribbling notes during that. That was one tip that I got. Most appear to be interested, not kind of, you know, disinterested. And there was one person, I think they said, that was kind of looking around the courtroom as opposed to focused in on, you know, the witness and the proceedings. But for the most part, what I've heard is that it's a very young jury. There's maybe a third of it that's over the age of 40 and several 20-somethings on the jury. From what I'm told, from people that are there. I haven't observed them at all. And, you know, engaged. I think the questions from the jury have been good. Digging in. So a lot of questions about the signal messages and signal chats. And can you...
Were they allowed to give questions during the trial?
Yeah. After each witness, so you have the direct examination, the cross, and the redirect. And then the jury asks questions of each witness if they have them. Trial, that role was played by the judge. So the fact finder can ask questions after each witness.
And having covered that, the juror questions, I mean, I've seen a lot of times where the judge says to the juror, I'm sorry, we can't ask that, right? They're still governed by
a
lot.
Let
me ask you this. This is from Jacob. Was Griswold called as a witness?
She was not. Certainly not by the prosecution. But there was Jesse Romero and Danny Casillas, both of whom are Secretary of State. And then Caleb Thornton, again, was called and qualified, inexplicably qualified as an expert in the case. So three representatives from her office, but not her.
What about Tina? Do they think Tina's going to, any word on, is she going to take the stand?
That was a big, so right before I joined you guys on the feed, there was a big hullabaloo about that. Tina actually asked the court, was asking the court questions to in her mind decide whether, and the jury wasn't there for this, but in her mind to decide whether or not to testify. And for her, the decision based on, you know, the questions she asked the judge, and the judge said, this is unbelievably improper. I can't believe this is happening, but it still allowed it. She's concerned that the prosecution is going to go on beyond the scope of direct and wanted assurances from the judge that they wouldn't be allowed to go beyond the scope of the direct. And the judge basically said, I'm going to follow the law. You know, usually they can't, but if you open the door to something, then they would be allowed
always
to.
Always arguable what opened the door. Well, let me know, because I know you want to get back to that.
We got a couple.
Do you have anything else? Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, quite a bit. Do you have any idea how many witnesses the defense is going to bring?
I don't, but I know that a lot of them have been dismissed. So I would say there was probably a couple dozen witnesses at one point on their list. And as you know, we're on the 10th day of trial, as trial has gone on, witnesses have been released. And once they're released, you know, they'll talk to us. Cause Brian and I have been covering every second of this on like seven different channels. And so we're, you know, once people are off, we're, you know, getting insights and things from people that were going to be called. I don't know how many they have left. I know the judge planned on ending this trial on Monday. And like I said before, when the jury came back, he said, you know, I know that was a long break. We did a lot of business. It was very productive. And I think we're back on schedule. That makes me think that Tina Peters is not going to testify, but maybe she is. We'll see. I don't know. Chuck, if you were her attorney, would you encourage her to?
No, definitely not. She has a very triggered temper. She can easily be riled. And you know, the prosecution would love to be keep her on as long as possible. Generally speaking, you're better off not testifying. But there are huge exceptions to that. And this may be one of the cases where the jurors very much want to hear from her and her side of it.
But she can't really. The problem is, let me ask this. The trouble that Tina has is that she can't tell her side, right? The judge isn't allowing the whole port, the whole thing about election integrity to come up. So she can't, she would be prohibited from even being.
Well, except if she's attacked on that by the prosecutors, that would be an exception. You can't go, well, you don't allow me to answer that court. The court would go, well, that's an improper question, or hopefully before it's asked, or before it's.
It's a tricky decision.
It's a cost benefit question for me. So the benefit of her taking the stand is, one, I think she's very likable. I think she will be more humanized to the jury if she's able to, you know, tell even part of her side. But the real benefit is to be able to speak to her intent. Why'd you do it?
Right.
And that is, and that was kind of part of what she was asking questions around. Why did you conceal Conan's identity? Why was that important to you? Well, she's not allowed to answer that question because she's not allowed to say that Conan, you know, Conan Hayes was a government informant. And personally, I don't think it matters whether he was or wasn't. It matters if she believed he was and she was doing, you know, what she needed to do ostensibly on behalf of the government and this, you know, government contractor or whatever. But she's not allowed to speak to that. She's not allowed to talk to her concerns about the election system. She's not allowed to talk about her concerns about Secretary of State and the processes in that office. And I think that the, for me, and I don't know about you guys are election deniers too. but a big part of why this is such an important issue to me. Yes, we've seen the things in, you know, the evidence that's come out and all that kind of stuff, but it's the obstruction. It's the obstruction from the government officials. And that doesn't fly in any other area. The SEC, can you imagine in the SEC world, you know, capital markets, public trust being paramount, just being able to obstruct? Not being, you know, not show your work. We're going to audit ourselves. And that's essentially what happens. What's happening with our elections is that they're auditing themselves. They have two familiar relationships with the vendors. The government and the vendors are inextricable.
That's
in
our smartmatic about that, right?
Yeah, exactly. Great point.
Well, the other one, and this is the toughest one, is do you think you've already proven reasonable doubt? And of course, attorneys always think they prove reasonable doubt until the jury comes out the other way, which is, pretty common.
The judge does not. So there was a directed acquittal motion yesterday. Yeah. And when the judge came back, he said where he believed, now the jury wasn't there, but where he believed things stood, and he thought they had overwhelmingly proved their case.
It's crazy for him to say that. I just wanted to say that. Yeah. That is insane for the judge to say that. I have covered hundreds of trials. In every trial, there's always a motion for a directed verdict. And inevitably, the judge says something very vague and wishy-washy, as they should.
I want to hear more.
Not even that, but that the jury can hear more, right? Yeah, that's a question for the jury. And for the judge to say that he thinks they overwhelmingly proved their case, that's completely outrageous, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, honestly, in front of the jury or not, because it's in front of
the world.
It's in front of the world.
People read that. Oh, that's crazy.
Well, I'll tell you, he was reading his findings on that. I almost thought he was going to rule in her favor because I couldn't imagine why he would be giving that much detail if he believed she was guilty at those, you know, that was very improper in my opinion, but I don't agree. I don't know.
No, it is.
Well, he seems to have a lot of
I'm
lot of
making other.
improper stuff, but that's always, you know,
Some of the
how
judges.
well you think you've done. Clearly, the judge doesn't think that, but you know, the judge has their own bias and everything else. And any judge will tell you they can't really tell how a jury is going to come, by and large, because who are the personalities and how they intermix and all that, which is always impossible to determine. But here's a recommendation. If you're not a lawyer, you should be one because you've been very impressive.
Thank you for that. On the reasonable doubt part, my opinion, I think that they have reasonable doubt on Jerry Wood and the you know, whether or not he was involved and his identity was stolen. I do think that they've proven reasonable doubt there. In terms of the statutory authority, I'm not sure that the jury has been educated enough, aside from the Secretary of State's office telling them what the law means. I don't think that that dispute has been made clear enough. I think if you can make that dispute more clear through your defense witnesses, which when I came on, Dallas Schroeder's on the stand, which I think he can get that, he can move the needle on that based on what he's been through with Secretary of State's office. I think if you can go a little bit further with the statutory dispute, I think she might get there, Chuck.
All right. Ash, thank
Thank you
you.
so much.
Yeah,
We
we appreciate
appreciate it.
it.
It's been great.
All right. Thank you. Keep up the good work. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Ash, up there, Ash in America, we'll see that that's outrageous that the judge would make that kind of ruling. We're gonna
Not
boot,
a ruling of the statement.
well, a statement. I see we have Vicki Tompkins with us from
Good.
El Paso
Great.
County. So we're going to move right into that. Vicki, if you want to go ahead
Hey,
and unmute yourself and turn your camera on, unless we're catching you by surprise. There you are. Hey,
Jackie.
Vicki, once again, welcome to the Chuck and Julie show, and thank you for your time. Are you there? Hey, welcome to the show. Oh, we may have to do this again, where sometimes you just have to do your audio. Can we maybe do that?
Oh, can you hear me?
Yep, now we can hear
Can
you.
you hear me now?
Yep.
Still a little hinky.
Still, well, let me try this. Can you, well, maybe let me ask you a question. We'll see if it kind of clears up. If not, what I may do is, you know what we're going to do here, Vicki? Our producer, I think what we're going to do. And Jacob says he's been having a hard time with the Zoom on his phone. Vicki, how about if we do this? Let's have you sign off of Zoom and Thomas will just call you on the phone. Is that okay? We'll do
Okay,
that.
that's fine.
Okay, good.
All right.
Thomas, if you want to go ahead and do that, that would be good. In the meantime, we could kind of take the questions. Jacob says he would call Griswold up as a defense witness, and the first question would be, are the Secretary of State was slapped down by the SCOTUS 9-0 when they try to keep Trump off the ballot?
They won't let
No,
that
that
go.
wouldn't allow it. It'd be kind of fun to just ask that,
But
though.
she's not a likable person. You may want to just bring it up because she's unlikable
Right.
as much as she can.
Well, I
Although you don't know how
the
it'll
whole
come
thing, I think,
across.
keep in mind, with the Tina Peters trial, the whole thing is to keep her quiet. Oh, good, we have Vicki on the phone. Okay, Vicki, let's try this again. Hey, thank you joining us telephonically now. How are you doing?
Yeah, no problem. No problem at all.
Okay, so
I
I
do
want
this
to.
all. I do.
Well, okay, yeah. Oh, and Dr. Donna is saying the Zoom is frozen on her also, so it's but it's good now. Let me ask her. So, what a great last time we were at your Lincoln Day dinner, you had Marjorie Taylor Greene, who is absolutely fabulous. And now
Yeah,
you
El
have.
Paso always has
You
fabulous
guys,
Lincoln dinner.
yeah, you guys, and Adams County under Daniel Bellefontaine didn't even bother doing it this year, just
Why
saying.
bother?
Right.
Because nobody will come.
That's right. But that's a whole different show. But Vicki, you guys have Mike Lindell coming up here in a couple of weeks. Why don't you tell us all about your Lincoln Day dinner and that sort of, and how people can come if they want to.
Okay, our Lincoln Day dinner is August the 24th. That's on a Saturday, of course. Again, Mike Lindell is our speaker. So, you know, it's our regular, you know, we have the VIP. If someone wants to get a VIP ticket, they can get that. That's going to be about from 5:30, 6:30 to 6:30. And then we have cocktail hour between 5:30 and 6:30 for those who do not want to, you know, pay for the VIP ticket. And then our dinner will start around the 7. And of course, we're going to have silent auctions. We have so many items coming in. It's absolutely amazing. And then also our live auction again, which we had a blast at our last Lincoln Day dinner. We actually had, oh gosh, it's terrible. I can see her face and getting her name right now. She's a congressman up in CD4. She's running for CD4. Lauren Boebert.
Lauren Boebert.
How'd I forget that? Yeah. And we had a blast with the live auction. We had several guns there, and so she was showcasing the guns for us. You know, they're all bigger than she is. So that was a lot of fun. And so anybody who is interested in election integrity and the experiences that Mike Lindell has had with his businesses being silenced on so many levels, you have a chance to see him face-to-face and one-on-one. If people want to buy tickets, they can go to our website, and we have a link there that says Lincoln Day Dinner, and they click on that link and see all the information.
That's the El Paso County website?
Yes, GOPElPaso.com.
Okay. And I would recommend people do that sooner rather than later. I mean, Mike Lindell is going to go fast, right?
Well, here's the other part of that. You know, usually everything, you have the Lincoln Day Dinner, and you know, you have some rhinos, and you have, you know, half and or a third and whatever else. For Vicky's one, the rhinos try to kill it and have their own little event somewhere. So you have just patriots, and it's so much fun because you get to talk to people who are a similar mindset rather than kind of going, you know, is this another establishment hack? No, if they're there, you know, they may have a spy, but if they're there, you know, they're true patriots, which makes it such a celebration.
It's a great event, yeah.
Such a celebration that, you know, I'll be coming definitely. I'll have to kind of leave Loveland early to get down
there. Golf tournament. I'll be doing a golf tournament.
But it's just so much fun. You know, so much fun if, you know, at a table, you can buy your own table with friends. But if you just get it as part of a table, boy, you're going to meet a lot of fun, interesting people from El Paso County.
Well, all over the state, really, right? I mean, you're going to have people from all over the state, I imagine, coming, right?
That's what we're wanting. I know I just got someone sign up from Pagosa Springs.
And you were indicating, so our favorite person, not Trader Todd Watkins, are they trying to crush this again, the rhinos and the establishment elite people?
Vehemently. In fact, you know, we set our schedule and we got our thing confirmed with Lindell on August the 24th. And then they're having their shadow meeting up in Brighton on August the 24th. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah,
unless the judge shuts him down again. Because we'll talk about that. I want people to know. So the judge reversed himself, said he did not have jurisdiction on the temporary restraining order. However, people need to be aware, the state still has its preliminary injunction hearing going on.
He's got a separate jurisdiction, but I saw Todd Watkins came out. They said, everything we did was perfect, and the court said so. It's just a lie.
That's a lie.
And it's just Todd lying like he likes to lie. And all the court said is, I don't think I have jurisdiction to decide the question one way or the other.
Address the merits on either side. Well, you know, Vicky, they did this to you before, right? And it didn't work. And it's not going to work this time. But, I mean, what can you bring us up to speed on, because we corrected it, but I think in one of our other shows we said Todd was gone, but he wasn't gone. What's the status?
Yeah, I've heard there's some effort to censure justice. Him. No, they've already censured him to did some justice and get him out as vice chair.
What's going on with that situation that you can tell us?
Well, as of today, he's still vice chair.
Okay.
As of today.
Okay.
Is there a meeting?
That's all I'm saying.
We don't want to put you on the spot.
That's all I'm saying.
Let me ask.
I can tell you this. There are a lot of upset people here in El Paso County with what he is doing. I don't understand it. It makes no sense to me. It has saddened many of us because we were such supporters of Todd. He's speaking for me of things I've never said, and I don't get that kind of behavior. You know, a lot of people have asked me, was he just this all along and just deceived us? Did this happen because he's so angry? You know, and I can't answer that. All I can answer is that he has decided to check out. He has not done any of the, I can't say all. He has done very few of the things that I have asked him to do. He seems to think that he has this great amount of authority, when in actuality, our bylaws are very clear that the vice chair works at the bequest of the chair.
Yeah. Right.
And only if the chair is not available, whether sick or something else, cannot be at a meeting or cannot function as the chair of a meeting, then the vice chair would have that privilege. but he has not had a situation like that. So I'm really disturbed that he would go all out with the likes of Eli Brimmer and others who have tried to destroy the party for decades and think that it's okay. I don't know what causes people to do this sort of thing, but it's very sad.
Well, and let me ask you this too, and this is just my opinion, because again, I want people to understand something, that if Todd wants to have a recall vote on Dave Williams, he can.
As long as he gets.
Yeah, the state party.
And he should easily be able to get 113.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
And not only that, but the state party, I think, is bending over backwards and has already set aside on August 31st, a week after Todd's fake meeting, for him to come in and appeal and argue his case, right? So the question is
right.
Why does Todd not simply, it would be the work of a couple of hours to get everybody to send back everybody who allegedly signed the petition to send in an email saying, yep, I'm a voting member and I signed it. That wouldn't take long. It would be nothing for Todd to simply say, okay, well, we're not going to have a fake meeting. We'll go ahead and argue our case at the real meeting, right? The reason I believe Todd does not want to do that is because he knows he doesn't have the votes and he would lose. And
no,
that's it.
He doesn't have the votes if he had a fair meeting.
But if
he can control the meeting,
that's what I'm saying,
and make up all the rules himself, you know,
that's
whoopee.
The only way you can. But that's what happened exactly. I mean, I think these bad guys learned their lesson, Vicky, when you conquered them in El Paso County. They tried to do the exact same thing, right? To hold a fake, you know, to try to set up a shadow party in El Paso County. They had the meeting and you won. And so now they're like, okay, we're not going to go to any more real meetings. We're just going to hold our own fake meetings. I mean, what do you think of my theory?
I think you're right. The sad part is when you have someone that all of us considered, you know, a patriot, a conservative, a grassroots guy, being commandeered by, you know, like Todd has been, you know, it makes you wonder what is the background of all this. I mean, when you work with the likes of Eli Brimmer to send out an email, or not an email, but a letter about a meeting, and you use the address of the El Paso County GOP, and I had nothing to do with it. I had no idea that was happening. You're starting to get into some murky waters, and you're going to start getting yourself into some legal trouble doing that sort of thing.
Exactly.
I mean, I have, I'm waiting to hear back from the Postal Service, because based on what I have shared with them and what I understand, that's mail fraud. So we'll wait to see what happens with that. Nothing may happen with it, but at least I had to report it because it's wrong.
Right.
And
well,
some
the
people
question.
Said, well, Eli came on and said that he paid the bill. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Who cares that Eli paid the bill? And
right.
That was,
you may pay the bill, but you used our office address to have information sent to us. I had no clue this was happening.
Right.
And
right.
So that's what bothers me. I'm glad you paid the bill. Thank you for paying the bill.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter when you've already.
Well, it also, Todd, it links Todd, if you didn't already figure it out, to Eli Brimmer.
Right.
What is Eli Brimmer paying that bill for?
Right.
And so you can hope because he, you know, Todd is really being run by Eli Brimmer and the people that support Eli Brimmer.
And that raises my question, speaking of bills, is so Chris Murray is their attorney. As you said, he's an $800 an hour attorney. Where's that money coming from? I mean, that's my big question. Did Eli himself put the bill or did someone, was Eli?
He
like
doesn't
a,
have that much.
Yeah, was Eli a cutout, right? So my big question is, who is paying for all of this? And I go back to my original thing. Maybe, by the way, they could just help get Republican candidates elected.
Oh, forget about that.
Do you have any sense on who's paying for all of this?
I don't. A name was given to me, which right now I cannot remember, but it's someone in another county that just hates Dave for whatever their reason is. Mm. And to me, that should, the first red flag for me was when Todd deleted our Facebook page. I thought, you know, we can work this out. We can talk. We can get things done here in El Paso County, you know, and really get out the vote. That's what we did. A lot of the guys that we had on the flyer that we sent out made it to the primary. So a lot of this I don't understand. And I'm the type of person, if I have a problem with you, I'm going to come and talk to you like an adult, because that's what adults are supposed to do. They're supposed to talk it out. And that has not happened. Todd has ghosted me for about 3 months now. And then yesterday he sent me this scathing email talking about his rights as the vice chair. And I have not responded because basically your right is to do whatever I asked you to do when I need you to do it.
Right.
And if you're not going to do that, and if you're not going to communicate, and if you're going to send out things that have not been approved by our office, if you're going to delete a Facebook page because I corrected you on allowing your wife to post things on that without having administrative permissions, and then you block me from being able to get on that page, and you block our web designer from getting on that page, that's a problem.
Yes.
And if you cannot see that is a problem, you've never worked a job, because if you did that on a regular job where you're actually getting paid, you'd have been fired that day, cleared out your office, and you would have had no access to anything.
No.
So,
Exactly. Hey, listen, I want to give time. Johnny Johnson is on, and he's got an event he wants to promote, so I want to give him time to do that.
Once again, let's give a date, time. Now you can get a ticket. It's
to Mike Lindell.
To Mike Lindell.
Okay. Saturday, August 24th. You can come to cocktail hour at 5:30. The VIP is at 5:30. You can do dinner at 7 o'clock. Get your tickets at GOPElPaso.com.
All right. I'll see everyone who does. I'll see you down there.
Mickey, thank you so much. Great job doing that.
As always.
And thank you for all the fighting that you do. I know, you know, the check's in the mail. No, not really, tragically, but thank you.
Thank you guys so much for having me on. I appreciate
Mickey
it.
Mickey Tonkins here. Yes. Thank you. And here from Charlene. This is exactly correct, Charlene. They don't really hate Dave. He just represents MAGA grassroots, and the Unit Party's assignment is to marginalize the grassroots. Exactly right, Charlene.
It's no different than what Trump says. They don't hate me. They hate you, and they just, I'm in their way.
Exactly. Hey, for the last couple of minutes, I want to bring Johnny Johnson on. He was so great to come on our show during the RNC.
Yeah.
He was there, and he himself is running the brave fight in the blue progressive city of Denver. So Johnny, and I got an email from you talking about an event that you have coming on too, and no one else will give anybody, these guys, any kind of publicity about it, except for the Chuck and Julie show.
Others.
So thank you for sending me that email, and Ron, you tell folks about what you're running for and your event.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for Dave Williams to reach down and say, Shannon, do you guys need some money?
Well, Dave Williams doesn't have any money. It's a problem. They don't have any.
Well, yeah, so we decided we were going to go door knocking, and me and Valdez, who's running for CD1 against Diane DeGette, so we decided just to go out to Confluence Park on 2101 15th Street, near this rich neighborhood called Little Raven downtown.
Right.
And hold our own, like, sit down, come up and talk to us, and we'll have some volunteers out there to answer questions about the Republican Party and just be a part of the community. And then afterwards, around, let's see, noon, we're going to go down to the Drip Cafe on 6. No, no. What is it? Oh, yeah. It's 869 Santa Fe, and just unwind and talk over things down there. But from 9 o'clock until about 11:45, we'll be at the Confluence Park.
And that's tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And in the morning.
In the morning. 9 o'clock. Yeah. I know, nothing at night. It's too many crazy things.
We're too old. All of us are too old. Okay. Well, cool. Well, thank you for doing that.
Yeah.
I mean, and thank you for fighting the good fight. And, you know, I think you guys do such a good job, and you're just such a calm, reasonable person. I think that even just you going out there does a good job for Republicans. So thank you for doing that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're getting into the mix. And if anybody wants to volunteer as far as like making phone calls and stuff like that, I have phone numbers, and you can help us with the phone bank as well. If you want to, if you say you can't make it down there. Oh, yeah, let me give a number. My number is just to give, if you can't find us at the park, whatever you want to, it's just 720-255-8871, 720-255-8871. And, you know, we're in it to win it.
All right. All right.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your time. Appreciate what you're doing.
All right.
Okay. Thank you. From Jacob, off topic. I took my wife to Bonnie Bray, my favorite ice cream shop. Mine too. My wife goes there for ice cream. I go to get a copy of the Glendale Cherry Creek Chronicle.
Perfect.
I notice the old Silverado Savings Building on the cover of the Chronicle. hey, that is going to wrap it up for us on this Party Friday, but I want to let everybody know this should be a fun show on Monday. We have Christopher Ruddy. He's one of the co-founder of Newsmax. Newsmax, which has had huge, I was reading, I think today, 30% growth. Mm-hmm. I mean, CNN plummeting, MSNBC plummeting, Axios firing people, everything, you know, what Washington Post, that's now all AI, except for a few idiots. But Newsmax is flourishing.
Yeah,
so
great.
So he's going to be on there to talk about that. And I think one of the things I want to talk to him, because Elon Musk is fighting this fight by himself against the advertising, the people who encourage.
And he's already gotten a victory under his belt because the association they set up called GAM or GRAM, GARM, has decided to dissolve.
It's one of those sites. What they do is they basically pressure advertisers to abandon conservative sites.
Yeah.
And so we could talk to him about that. So I guess thriving in this kind of atmosphere is massive. So we'll talk to Newsmax about that. In the meantime, though, it is off to Party Friday for us.
It is. It is.
And we will see. Thank you to everyone. Thank you to Vicky. Thank you to Ash. Everybody on Zoom. Always Thomas at BBS. And we will see you all on Monday.
And everybody pray for Tina Peters. Yeah. She deserves our prayers.
Exactly.
Thank you, everybody. We'll see you on Monday.